Well, my name is Kata Schwain, and I teach at St. Olaf College in Northfield, Minnesota. Hurrah! We have some other Olaf faculty, lots of Olaf people around. I teach, my specialty is creative writing, and poetry in particular. So I chose these two poems. They're both about autumn, which kind of seems now in the context of the weather we're experiencing a little bit ridiculous, but maybe living in the world of the poems will cool us off a little bit or something like that. Yes, and we're all this week sort of the theme has been nature. So just very briefly, I wanted to give some information on the two poets we're looking at today. The first is John Keats, who I'm guessing many of you have maybe heard of at some point in time. He lived from 1795 to 1821. He's considered a romantic poet and was friends with poets such as Shelley and Wordsworth and people like that. Just a little bit of background. As you can tell from the dates there, he only lived to be 25 and wrote arguably some of the best poems in the English language. His life was very centered in many ways around death. Both of his parents died before he was 15. Then he watched his brother Tom die of tuberculosis. He also, when he was 15, went into training with an apothecary surgeon. So he witnessed a lot of surgeries and things like that, and but never actually practiced being an apothecary. He got the degree, but never actually practiced it, decided to write poems instead. In 1819, he contracted tuberculosis, which is what his brother died of, and then obviously died in 1821. So he did so the last 2 years of his life, he sort of lived knowing he was going to die and knowing sort of how he was going to die, having watched his brother go through it. So many of his poems seem like they were written by someone who was much, much older than 25. But he lived in that space of sort of death and grief for much of his life. The other poet we're going to look at is James Wright, who lived from 1927 to 1980. He was born in Ohio, and his mother was a laundress, and his father worked in a glass factory, and neither had an education beyond eighth grade. So a lot of his poems and his poetry comes out of concern for workers, for social movements. He's very in touch with sort of working class society and kind of what that would have meant. In the middle of high school, he had a nervous breakdown, dropped out of high school for a year, and then in 1946, he joined the army and was stationed in Japan during the American occupation. He taught at the University of Minnesota and McAllister College. Some of you maybe are familiar with those, and also at Hunter College in New York. So that's just a little bit of background on the two poets. Before we get to the poems, I just want to have people throw out, just when you hear the word autumn or think of that season, what do you think of? What sort of images, feelings, anything, just what pops to your mind when you think of autumn?
Color.
Harvest.
Great.
Changes,
yes.
Crackly leaves. Crisp
age.
Air.
Great.
Pecan pie.
Pumpkins. Cool weather.
Football.
Awesome. That's going to tie into our second poem.
And back to school.
Back to school, yes.
Which kind of always makes it, to me, feel like it's the start of the new year.
Yeah. Oh, autumn, okay.
I'm sure sometimes with poems, but autumn always feels like that's really the
So both newness and age, kind of, at the same time? Well, we've got age already, I guess. That's good. Yeah, anything else?
Decay.
I mean, poets write and other writers for a long time have used the seasons as sort of metaphor for the human lifetime, right? So what sort of ages do you think of autumn being? Does that make sense?
We want the new 60 or the old 60?
Well, let's do all the seasons. So we've got spring, and there's obviously no right answer here. I'm kind of curious how we would.
Depends upon how old you are.
How old you're going to live until, right? Okay, so what would you, I don't know, what do you guys think? What's spring? Zero to what?
Grown.
To what?
Classic.
To what?
30s.
To 30s?
Yeah.
Zero to 30?
25.
Zero to 25? All right.
Come on.
All right, so summer is 26 to what?
40.
40? Summer 26 to
45? 50?
To look back. So autumn's the time for reflection, but you're not in winter yet. Okay. So.
Senior citizen discounts are 55. So.
Okay, what about 55 you want to say is summer then?
At least.
At least, okay. So then autumn is 56 to?
As long as you're
way out there.
Set 80?
57.
57. 56 to 75?
80.
80.
Wow.
Let's hope.
Well, that ties in.
But there's a suggestion back here that winter is actually.
Winter's death.
Yeah.
So you don't live in a winter period ever?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You're alive and you're the flowers.
Metaphorically.
Depends if you're in Florida.
All right, enough. At least this group has a sense of humor. Okay, so we've really established nothing about the ages. except that autumn seems to be a time of when you're old enough to reflect back on things that have happened, but have not yet totally decayed. Okay.
He died at 25, you know?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. His autumn was like, 23. That's a great point, Alice. Yeah. So,
and I might have, until about a year ago, agreed with those, you know. But we have this lady at our church named Bertha. She had her 90th birthday in November, and she brings the older ladies to church.
Yeah.
I mean, like, she's the driver of the church. So it's really changed my mind, and, you know, that age doesn't matter unless you mind. Or
so it's more of a, so based
mind
on
over matter.
Bertha and Keats here, it's really more about where you psychologically believe that you are more than what the age says that you are.
Yeah.
Okay. Fabulous.
Going back to the first list, when I see the word decay, I also see the word opportunity.
Oh, okay.
As you get older, you have opportunity maybe to get into new things.
Yeah. Well, as we go through these poems, part of what I want to look at is, you know, what things are the poets picking up on here? You know, are they picking up on this sense of harvest and opportunity and newness, or are they in the place of age and decay and sort of reflection? Like, where are we? So let's take a look at two autumns. Start. be in their autumn place. Yeah. Well, Keats certainly, I mean, in reading this, I'm totally convinced he's in his autumn season. And theoretically, I guess...
Out of what?
In his autumn, I mean, that he has experienced the autumn time of life, even though at this point he's 23. Yeah, right. And I think, I mean, and I don't know the specific dates, but I think we can assume at this point he knows that he has tuberculosis. He found out in 1819 at some point. So, anyway, would somebody, maybe we'll do three different readers here. Who wants to do 1, 2, and 3? Wanda wants to do 2. Ricky, 3? Great, okay.
Seasons of mist and mellow fruitfulness, close bosom friend of the maturing sun, conspiring with him how to load and bless with fruit the vines that round the thatched eaves run, to bend with apples the moss cottage trees, and fill all fruit with ripeness to the core, to swell the gourd and plump the hazel shells with a sweet kernel, to set budding more and still more later flowers for the bees, until they think warm days will never cease, for summer has o'erbrimmed their clammy cells.
Who hath not seen thee oft and in thy store? Sometimes whoever seeks abroad may find thee sitting careless on a greenery floor, thy hair soft lifted by the winnowing wind, or on a half-reaped furrow sound asleep, drowsed with the fume of poppies, while thy hook spares the next swath and all its twined flowers. And sometimes, like a gleaner, thou dost keep steady thy laden head across a brook, or by a cider press with patient look, thou watchest the last oozings, hours by hours.
Where are the songs of spring? Aye, where are they? Think not of them, thou hast thy music too, while barred clouds bloom the soft dying day and touch the stubble plains with rosy hue. Then in a wailful choir the small gnats mourn among the river sallows borne aloft, or sinking as the light wind lives or dies, and full-grown lambs loud bleat from hilly bourn, hedge crickets sing, and now with treble soft the red breast whistles from a garden croft, and gathering swallows twitter in the skies.
Thank you. Okay, what I would like to do as a way of sort of working through this poem is actually to divide you up into groups. Yes, the old group conversation. In this poem, we get sort of three versions or perspectives on autumn. So each stanza is looking at autumn in a slightly different way. So what we're going to do is break up into three groups, and in your group, and I'll write these questions on the board too, I want you just to you know, maybe read through together your stanza again and talk a little bit about what the speaker of the poem wants us to learn about autumn in this stanza. Who or what is autumn in the stanza? What kinds of things does autumn do? Does that kind of make sense? Those sorts of questions. The second thing I want you to do as a group is to just look through your section carefully, or your stanza carefully, and see if you can find any words or phrases, and maybe have somebody underline them, that you feel have, well, I'm going to say negative connotations. So a lot of words are just ambivalent. They don't have connotations either way, right? But some words just naturally are positive, right? So ripeness or something, right, is generally a word that we would associate would say has positive connotations, where a word like decay has sort of negative connotations. Does that kind of make sense? So words that you sort of feel have negative connotations, just as a group, sort of sort that out. Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay. So I'm going to try to divide you into three sort of even groups. groups, sort of. Let's have Pam and Tony, Penny and Pam, right?
Yes.
Why don't you guys go and all, everyone sort of there, yeah? And then let's have maybe Petter and Ricky. Why don't you slide over and join these three lovely folks? And Petter, do you want to go back and join those three lovely folks? And you guys over here get section one. You guys get two. And you guys get three. All right? And I'll write the sort of little question-y things on the board.
What is autumn in this section? What does autumn do? What does the
transition where
want us to understand?
Is fulfilled. No, because the hate is the hateful ones are what awesome people
are.
Until
they think one day.
It sounds like
always.
Think differently.
It's about another minute, enough time. Yeah, okay. Take one more minute to finish up. Wondrous genius knowledge you now have about this section.
So we're gonna separate.
All right, group one. And other people, as we go through, you can feel free. We'll sort of let the group speak first, but other people can jump in, too, if you're noticing things about the section. But so what's up with Autumn in this section? What does Autumn do? What does the speaker seem to care about in terms of communicating about Autumn? What? Silence.
It's right, fruitful. Fulfillment of a promise is just sort of that place right in between summer and autumn. And we didn't really find any negative.
Well, wait, before you jump to that, I mean, what else do we, like, who's Autumn's BFF? Best friend. I'm using some slang. Oh, okay. Okay.
That's right.
All right, Sun's Autumn's best friend. We get a lot of, what are a lot of the verbs that we get in that section?
Bird clouds. B-A-R-R-E-D clouds.
That's your section. We're on section one right now.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes, but you're going to have your chance too. Don't you worry. Yeah, what are some of the verbs we get?
Fill.
Swell.
And plump.
Plump.
Bless.
What?
Load and bless.
Load. So there's a sense of things sort of getting bigger and expanding to their full extent of sort of... I'm still in summer right now. Oh, boy. Okay.
That would be a sweet kernel.
Sweet kernel's going to pop pretty soon. Okay. So we have a sense of things ripening, getting bigger, sort of getting to their point of bursting in this section, right? But also, what?
Fulfillment.
Yes. Also this sense that we're seeing Autumn through the things that Autumn does. Does that make sense? Like, when we get to section two, we're going to see Autumn in a very different way. The way that we see Autumn's power is by seeing the kernel plumping, right? Or the vines. So the season is embodied in the different things we see, the different natural items, right? So... Fabulous. And did you guys find any words with negative connotations or phrases?
Well, based on a script, definition of a word that has a negative connotation. However,
Petter's my husband, so I know what Paul is now.
However,
I didn't know that. Thank you for that.
I
did too.
Well, however, based on a more interpretive element, we did come up with something. If you would like,
I would like to hear that.
Would you like us to share that?
Please.
Okay.
Please.
Well, it has to do with one word and one line. But the first word is conspiring, which does have a negative connotation. At least we found it sort of interesting that you used that term, and that because naturally you move towards the idea of conspiracy.
True. Yeah. Great.
So sort of have a particularly good connotation. And then we also talked about the tenth line, until they think one
yes.
will never cease. Mm-hmm. That in terms of especially reading it in relationship to the idea of conspiracy, that the season and the sun are conspiracy, and that they sort of tricked these poor little plants and whatnot
well,
into
right.
thinking that.
But the reality is going to
right.
be something other.
Like Holden's summer will never end.
Okay, any other. Didn't you. Well.
What about clammy?
Yeah, clammy cells? You didn't think that was a little yucky?
Yeah.
Yucky and negative connotations, those are two different things.
And I was
anybody else clammy cells? Okay.
I was clammy yesterday.
Yeah.
Yeah, did that feel good? Did you want to go back
no.
to clamminess? Yeah.
No.
I did feel like a clammy cell. Okay. I'm adding clammy cell, even if you guys think that's lovely. All right. So great. So how about, let's move on. Any final thoughts from anyone about section one? You good? All right. Part two. What have you got for us? How is autumn revealed in this section?
Autumn has a head and hair.
Yes. Okay. So in this section, we get Autumn as a person, right? Autumn becomes a human being, a goddess even, perhaps. And what is she like to do?
Lays about.
Yeah.
Smell the poppies.
Yeah.
Drowse and sit.
Huh?
Contemplate.
Is that how you spell drowse? Is that a Z? Is that right?
No, S.
No,
S. Drowse. Okay. Yeah.
I think she contemplates.
Contemplates. Yeah.
Not only drowses, she sleeps.
Yeah, no, it's true. If the verbs in this section have to do with sort of swelling and ripening and things like that, the verbs in this section have much more to do with sort of laziness and drowsiness and kind of lolling about in that stupor that all of us feel when it gets really hot, like in 3 hours, right? Anything else?
So she watches the last oozings.
Watching the last oozings, yes.
With patient look, that's interesting. It's not like she's bored or.
Mm-hmm.
It's.
She's in a rush.
No rush. She's. Yeah. That's what she's doing.
Yeah.
She's anxious about the next thing. Right, not worried about the next.
Content, sort of a contentment in that sort of space and time. Yeah.
Wasn't autumn kind of like the nesting time? Everybody kind of nests down in, he gets lazy. And,
okay, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That's when we go to hearty soups and breads and.
Yeah.
Well, I tend to think of autumn more as a really busy time because it's harvest time.
Harvest, yeah.
Yeah.
But does she seem to be busy here?
No.
We think she's finished, this is looking at her after the harvest.
Okay.
Yeah, we think
okay.
she's
kind of
sated.
What's this? When she. She's on a half-reaped furrow, right? Which kind of suggests that, like, half the work got done and then she didn't finish the other half. She's asleep, drowsed with a few of poppies while her hook spares the next swath and all its twined flowers, right? So she's kind of halfway done and then, you know?
there's the sun, and she's asleep, right? What'd somebody say?
She's kind of drunk.
She's kind of drunk. Yeah, the fume of poppies part, right?
Or maybe she's stoned. Poppies making that up here? Yeah.
I love your goddess suggestion, because in Minnesota anyway, in the fall, there are these mists that come in the morning and settle in low places.
Oh,
it reminds me of fabric kind of draping your
thoughts. Oh, beautiful.
I mean, once you said goddess.
Yeah. How about, did you guys notice any words with negative connotations?
Oozing.
Yeah.
Fume.
Okay.
Careless.
Good.
Hour by hour, it seems to say it's going on.
On and
so
on.
It
yeah.
It started early and it keeps coming. It keeps happening and it's not encouraging.
Half reaped,
okay. Which could be good, or, you know, that could be the glass half full or half empty, right?
But I think
like,
if
depending.
Him has dined at 25, you know, and
yeah,
his life
not
even half lived,
Okay, how about group three? What's the focus in this section on autumn? What do we seem to be focusing on? What aspect of autumn?
I said autumn is the end of the day.
Okay, end of the day. What else? What sense? Which physical sense is most at work here in terms of the description?
Ending.
What?
Ending.
Yeah, definitely ending. I'm just wondering in terms of sight, hearing, touch, taste.
Oh.
Soft.
Music,
sound, right?
Winnowing.
Yes. What let's name what are all the sounds we hear in this?
Bleat,
whistle,
twittering.
Twitter.
Sing. What is the choir of the gnats? Whistling.
Yep.
Mourn, small gnats mourn.
Yeah. So it's filled with the end of, right? The time is the end of the day, right? And the sound, and we're occupied by hearing what it is, not just kind of the things we've gotten in these two have been more visual images, right? And even sense, smells, things like that. And here it's our ears that are being kind of touched. What else did you guys notice? Anything about that section?
That autumn, or that the writer pictures autumn as looking back at spring and not,
yes.
Maybe not feeling this, that autumn is as good as spring.
Okay.
He's telling that, yeah, you have your own music.
You're
special in your own way.
Yeah. What's kind of funny to me about that line, too, is the speaker asks, where are the songs of spring? Where are they, right? So you're feeling that absence of spring, right? Clearly spring isn't present. And then the next line is, think not of them, which is interesting because the speakers just said, where did they go, autumn? Oh, don't worry about it. Like, why'd you bring it up if we weren't supposed to think about it, right? Right, but certainly even the mention of spring reminds us that we are not in the time of spring, right? It's, things feel pretty positive here, right? But by this last section here, right, we're to the end of day, we're being reminded that it's not spring. And how about for negative connotation words?
Wailful.
What is it, wailful?
Mourn, sinking sun.
Sinking,
dying.
Did you say?
Sinking sun.
Yep.
Dying.
Is it dying, yeah?
Yeah.
What else?
Sallows. What's a river sallow?
Dies, too.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of,
hey,
Kate. Yeah. Oh.
This is Bard.
Yeah, Bard clouds.
I think with, well, anybody else want to give their response?
Yeah.
Oops. I was thinking, in the evening you see the clouds kind of,
yeah,
you know, and
forming sort of bars across.
Yeah.
I was thinking literal like bars made of like clouds with bars made out of bars.
Yeah, some kind of
look it up.
What?
Go look it up.
You could go look it up. I did look up.
And I was thinking when you think of Bard owl, it has all those brown and white color to it.
Oh, yeah. So maybe sort of striped with different colors of sunset.
Of gray and white.
Well, and what I think is beautiful about that first image too is, you know, the speaker saying, "Hey, Autumn, you have music too," and the first musical sound that we get is the clouds blooming in the soft dying day, which we think of as image, right? But the speaker has now prefigured that with like, listen to this, it's music, right? And then you sort of go to like, wow, what, you know, does that make a sound? That you know, the clouds blooming, you know, if it could make a sound, what sound would it sort of be, you know? Because it's placing the visual image into the context of sound, you know? Or at least that's how I...
Going back to the Bard clouds,
yeah.
You were talking about the difference in the colors. Mm-hmm. And if you go down the subtle planes with rosy hues, mm-hmm. isn't that, you know how the sunsets in the fall are so
yeah.
vibrant?
Yeah.
Maybe it refers to rosy?
Yeah. That we're seeing it reflected on the fields themselves.
Right.
Yeah, both in heaven and
especially if they've burned the fields, then the sunsets will be even more red.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Good job, you guys. So even though in these two we certainly...
So did you look it up? Yeah, it's... Well, some of you have to help me. But, it's a pattern of stripes or colors in fabric in which the warp goes between the warp and the woven fabric.
Oh.
I think the warp is the fabric goes this way and the warp goes this way.
You warp and you web.
So I, right.
So he's seeing it as
woven,
the clouds
right.
looking like woven bands.
It's about texture and your textiles.
So. Fabulous.
Amazing.
I think sunset comes in there too with that word rosy.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. And we're definitely in this end of the day time.
But I still can't hear it making the sound.
Yeah, you still can't hear what sound it would make. But it's what?
Well, part of music is when, like, if you were going to strum something, mm-hmm. it says the clouds bloom touch the stubble plains. So mm-hmm. I just can imagine that
touch.
Strumming the plain. Yeah.
Oh. That's beautiful. So even though we were definitely able to find some words with negative connotations in the first two sections, conspiring, the stink, the clammy cell, and then we get sort of the oozing, the fume, but really it's in this third section that we really get the heavily, right, wailful, mourn, sinking, dying, dies, right? There's really an emphasis on the ending portion of things, right? That's where we are. We're at the end of day. So throughout the poem, there's sort of a movement from the ripeness and fullness of autumn, right, to the aging and the decay and the ending parts of it, right? Like the poem moves us through all those aspects of autumn, but very gently, yeah? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's no sense in the third one that it's something to be afraid of.
Great.
It's like natural.
Yeah.
And it's like every one of the negative words is combined with something that makes it a little more palatable or
beautiful.
Things, so, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep. And our last, I think it's always important where a poet chooses to end, right? And really, or sinking as the light wind lives or dies, is the last line in that stanza that has those words that are really loaded with the negative connotations, right? And then our final Images are the full-grown lambs, loud bleat from hilly bourn, hedge crickets sing, and now, with treble soft, the redbreast whistles from a garden croft, and gathering swallows twitter in the skies. Right? So our last image is the swallows gathering together in that final moment, which is, even though we know it's this moment before darkness is coming, you know, the swallows are together and they seem pretty happy. You know, they're not, you know, being crushed under the wheels of a bus or something. Yeah, any other thoughts about, I mean, in general, it sounds like people's overall emotional response to the poem is fairly positive, is that right? I mean, how does the poem make you feel? Yeah.
I think there's a lot of anxiety in those last lines.
Yeah.
Those noises and the singing and the twitter. Maybe it's because Twitter and
is anxious,
yes,
too.
Anxious,
yeah.
And,
yeah.
bringing something
yeah.
to the poem that's not there.
Yeah,
or
that's
makes
right.
me anxious.
He was definitely looking forward to technology and the
right.
advancement. Yeah,
must
definitely.
Have been
but,
yeah.
but the word sort of, it seems to me, carries a connotation of there's sort of twittering is anxious, but it's also mindless and empty.
Okay.
And so I think it's.
So you would read the last couple lines as there still being the presence of sort of negative things going
it's,
on.
It's just sort of activity for activity's sake in the face of death.
Okay.
And I think
so
about
yeah.
the full-grown lamb bleeding. I mean, that's when they're slaughtered.
Yeah.
So.
Wow, I think we know who the cynics in the room are.
being someone who's in the autumn of my life, to me, it's very positive and very calming and very, it makes me feel kind of good about it.
Okay.
There's a lot of things that are going on, but I'm okay with that.
Okay. Well, for those of you who do think this ends in a negative place, let's look at a different poem about I'll show you the
negative.
Ah, yeah, you just try to contain your excitement until you get it.
Okay.
Though maybe, you know, who knows what you'll think. All right, so everybody got a copy? So we're looking at Autumn Begins in Martins Ferry, Ohio. Would anybody like to read it? Anyone feeling bold? I'll read it. In the Shreve High Football Stadium, I think of Pollock's nursing long beers in Tiltonsville and gray faces of Negroes in the blast furnace at Benwood, and the ruptured night watchman of Wheeling Steel, dreaming of heroes. All the proud fathers are ashamed to go home. The women cluck like starved pullets, dying for love. Therefore, their sons grow suicidally beautiful at the beginning of October and gallop terribly against each other's bodies.
I'm
going
to go back to this one.
Yeah! Which one do you think ends on a happier note now? Would you rather have twittering or galloping terribly against each other's bodies? My dog? Which do you choose? Okay.
Women clap like starving bullets?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Should we, let's make a quick list of words with negative connotations in this poem. What do you guys think? What words don't sound so great?
Gray faces.
Gray faces.
Pollocks. Pollocks, Pollocks, whatever that is. It sounds bad, I don't know what it is.
It is.
Yeah.
Is that Polish people?
Yeah.
Negative.
But it's the negative version of it, yeah. What else?
Ashamed. Starved.
like Tipton Field?
Yeah, I think they're
probably other
place locations. It's 11:45.
It's 11:45.
We started a little bit late, so we're not totally over yet, but please go wherever. Oh, Petter's like 15 minutes late for dish time, isn't he? Good job, Petter! They're loving you up there right now. Okay, so really in a poem that has about, what, 1/6 of the words of this autumn poem, right, there's certainly, we can just see from this list here, a lot of negative, sad things.
They all need Prozac.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because one of the things I was going to say when you first asked this about autumn, you know, you're gonna call, I was going to think of homecoming.
Yeah.
And it was so much fun.
Oh, yeah.
Pom poms, and this is not a
happy homecoming. This is not happy homecoming. No, it is not. No, no. And what, I mean, Keats, who's a romantic poet, right? He's going to talk about autumn, and he's immediately going to like wander out into nature, and look at the harvest. And what's very different about this one?
This guy's depressed.
Well, he's depressed, and where is he?
He's suburban. He's in a stadium.
Yeah, he's in a football stadium, right? But very much we're looking at autumn in the industrial world, right? Like. That autumn doesn't just come to the like pretty bleeding lands, right? It comes to us where we are. In this case,
Ohio.
In this case, in a high school football stadium in Ohio. Yeah. What else do you guys notice about in this? I mean, we could talk about this poem obviously for quite a long time as well. There's a ton here.
I think kind of dreams that never came true.
Yep.
Seems to turn all of our expectations on their heads. I
mean, okay.
Football is all about heroes. It's all about victory, and it's all about enthusiasm and excitement. And every proud father is actually ashamed.
Yeah.
And so he's sort of pulling away all of the excitement and showing this.
Great. So we start with the first line about football.
Yeah.
Creates all these expectations for us that one by one he sort of.
So is it like the proud fathers? They're proud of like their sons who are in the football field, but they're ashamed of who they are and what they haven't accomplished. They don't want to go home to their wives because.
No, because they left and they left the football game.
Oh. Well, yeah, they're ashamed to go home. Yeah, why are they ashamed to go home?
I think they're ashamed to go home because they used to be young.
Remember.
The women dying for love.
And I think that whole promise of the Industrial Revolution failed a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know, right. They're having to nurse the beer. That means they don't have enough money to just keep chugging.
Great.
So they have to make it last a really long time. And the workers are gray faced, you know, and this poor ruptured night watchman, you know.
Isn't that it's a just, horrible word? I mean, ruptured. I just.
What does that mean?
Yes,
well, you know, broken. I mean, ruptured in some. I mean, yeah, it just is such a.
Physically.
But all of these people are dreaming of their heroes.
Yeah.
All of them are, I mean, they're nursing their beers, but they're thinking of their own dreams and hopes. And the same way with all of them, they're doing what they have to do, but they're dreaming of what they wanted to do.
Which makes it, there is that sort of sense of hope and dreaming, which in some ways, amongst all the other lines, makes it even more painful, because we see that they're not totally crushed at this point. There's still this hope.
I'm not suicidal.
I was going to say.
They're going to their death, but they're very good looking.
Yeah.
Full of power.
They're young, they're healthy, they're strong.
Yeah, I can't
go out there and beat each other up.
Well, it's just such an interesting image for football. I think. I mean,
is it the
you
heroes
know?
And football thing? Is it that when he's sitting there at the game, thinking of all these people who are dreaming of heroes, and that does the game bring that out to him? That I think that's. I mean, when you think of the little boys start at second grade, they're
some ways, to me, the most important word in this whole poem is therefore. Because there's this sense that what we're witnessing in the sons, you know, this sort of, this terrible urge to be beautiful and to be heroes and to be in that moment, that in some way they are aware of their fathers and their mothers and everyone in the blast furnace and all of these things, and that their actions are in direct sort of response to that, which, you know, like that this is sort of how we behave. This is sort of our moment of being suicidally, you know, we know we're going to our deaths, but we're going to do it beautifully because this might be the last moment we have to do this before the rest of life. Yeah.
It's like no way you can win. You're just marching to your death.
And do the football players then become the Polacks nursing the beers?
I think my son has coached high school football for several years, and I always think that the saddest football game that we go to is senior night, where they present all the seniors, and this is their last home game before the home crowd. And probably 99% of them will never play football again after this season. And they've spent all this time from, like you said, second, third grade, practicing football, learning football, learning the rules, learning how to play it, and how to condition themselves, and all these things. And then once that senior year is over, It's over.
Not only for the kids, but for the parents that have been looking forward to this since they had that first.
Katie, what were you saying then, Ricky?
Oh, I just wondered a little bit. This is kind of a different interpretation.
Yeah. No, please.
It's, he says where he is, and then he says, I think. And I wonder if that doesn't mean he's an outsider to this.
Interesting.
That maybe he comes and he sees this, and he, to him, this looks like a horrible, horrible place. But possibly to these people, it isn't.
Okay.
I don't know if that's true.
In the stadium, he's thinking about
he's
this.
Like some
it reminds me of
urban academic or something wandering into this world of football.
Well, certainly, I think
maybe he just doesn't get it. Maybe to him it seems
it
really
seems
awful
bad.
To work in a factory, but maybe just the people who do that, it isn't. I don't know.
Were you at Jody's session yesterday when he was talking about? He was talking about communities and other people there, communities and states of sort of disrepair, and how we always in those communities see the worst things instead of the beautiful things. And certainly this would be a poem to us just that. But I think, I mean, who knows, you know, who this, because the speaker and the poet are not necessarily the same person at all, right? But certainly James Wright, he was born in Martins Ferry, Ohio. So this is his hometown. But to come back as an educated person, having gone to college and graduate school, I think can make you also feel like you're an outsider stepping back into this place, you know? So there might be both of those things kind of going on. Yeah, Mom?
Just one thing that struck me as just a huge contrast between the two poems is that this is completely inhabited by people.
Yeah.
You know, and the other one has, it's completely nature. You've got, you know, the Polacks, Negroes, the night watchmen, the fathers, the women, the sons.
There's no
contrast.
Yep.
This is.
Go. And then.
Yeah. So, did he write other poems that were sort of anti-industrial, anti-tech, you know, that?
Oh, yeah.
Because it seems like it's, for me, I'm sensing the starved pullets put me back to where, you know, if we were still on the farm, we would have plenty of food and the little chickens wouldn't be starving, but now we're in Gary, Indiana, or Martinsville, or wherever, and it's so industrial that we don't have, we've lost that touch with nature, even.
He has, there's a beautiful poem called A Blessing. Does anybody know that one? It's outside, he writes it outside of Rochester, Minnesota, and it's, I can print it out for you if you'd like, I can find it, but it's an encounter with two horses in a field, and the last line is something about, I'm going to quote it incorrectly, but about if I could
step outside of my body, it would break into blossom or something like that. And it basically is about this whole encounter with these two horses. And so yes, he's totally also capable of writing a poem that's very rooted in nature.
Also, it also shows a lot of the stereotyping he's done according to types of people that would put their whole life into something that's so temporary glory instead of education and future welfare of the yeah. whole world. It's yeah. just themselves and their glory. And that's not those cultures. You know, they're just, they're forced into something like that because of their inability to become scholarship winners and people that are hired in high places.
Yeah, he certainly is acutely aware of race and class and how that plays into poverty.
And I think
like that.
That's kind of very negative for me.
Yeah. Verlaine?
I was going to say it's definitely an autumn poem. I mean, he's looking back, he's reflecting, and people who are in the throes of this may not be thinking the way he's thinking. He doesn't have to be an outsider in terms of the community, but he can be an outsider in the sense that he's in this autumn. And he
oh,
can
great.
Reflect back on it.
That's fabulous. And that's a great place to end, too, the fact that he, that maybe what makes this most autumnal is the speaker's state of mind as he thinks about these things more than the actual, I mean, it's October, obviously, but even more than the time of year, the internal state of the speaker here.
There he is.
Yeah. Thanks so much for coming, guys.